crossroads of empires, battleground of the ages, city of peace and of war. This is Jerusalem, where archaeology uncovers the empires of yesterday, where prophecy decodes the headlines of today. This is where history and prophecy come alive. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. I'm Christopher Eames, and I will be your host for today's program. For our program, we'll be talking about scientific dating, specifically dating the composition of the books of the Bible. Some of our listeners might remember a program I did a couple of weeks back on dating the writing of the Torah. That's the first five books of the Hebrew Bible, or the otherwise known as the Old Testament. And if you'd like to listen to that program again, you'll find the webcast on our website, watchjerusalem.co.il. So the program a few weeks ago was on the Torah. These are the first five books of the Bible, and the first of a three-part division of the Hebrew Bible, or, as I say, Old Testament. We have the Torah as number one, then the prophets as part two, and then the writings as part three. So as I said in my last program, we're going to continue this series on dating the Bible. So for today's program, we'll look at that second part, the composition for the date of the prophets. These are just what their name implies, the books written by prophets or primarily about prophecy. So for the sake of time, we'll only look at a few examples of the many books of the Hebrew Bible, of the Old Testament, that fall into this category of prophets. Now, the dating of the Bible is a controversial topic, to say the least. Traditionalists say that the Torah was written by Moses, the Psalms were written by David, Proverbs were written by Solomon, and the prophets were written pretty much by whichever name is carried in the title. Revisionists, on the other hand, say that the Torah was written after Babylonian captivity, basically 1,000 years later than what the traditionalists say. And along with everything else, essentially, they essentially put the Old Testament, the Hebrew Bible, as into a composition date after the captivity, whereas the traditionalists put most of it beforehand. The revisionists put the book of Daniel in the 2nd century BC, while the traditionalists put it 400 years earlier in the 6th century BC. So this is a hot-button debate. Can we really know the answer? Just how authentic and ancient are the biblical writings? So we'll examine the textual content, the linguistic style, some archaeological evidence, and some contemporary works related to this question, this very important question, because the essence of this question is the Bible really and truly an important, ancient, authentic, even God-inspired work? Can we know that, or is it just some late forgery, as the revisionists would have us believe? So like I say, we'll go through a few examples from the division of the Hebrew Bible known as the prophets, and we'll start out with the book of Isaiah. Now, this book is traditionally dated to the 8th century BC, so around 850 BC, give or take. And this book, the 750 BC, give or take. Now, this book has faced a great deal of scrutiny. It's usually considered by revisionists to be the work of at least two authors, and they take the first about 39 chapters of the book of Isaiah and attribute that to one author, and then from chapter 40 onwards, and attribute that to at least a second writer, perhaps three or four. They look at supposedly a different style that begins from chapter 40 onward, and from that extrapolate that, well, we don't have one writer here, we don't have just the prophet Isaiah, we've got a couple of different writers that probably wrote a lot later than what the Bible says. Now, the central logic against the traditional dating for the book of Isaiah is that there is no way a prophet could tell the future. For example, Isaiah prophesies by name, the future King Cyrus and the precise destruction, exactly how Babylon, the city of Babylon, would be destroyed by him over 150 years in advance. So thus, according to the critics, the book must have been written at a later date. Could this be the case? Now, the truth is, the supposed changes in style from the first part of Isaiah to the second part of Isaiah, they can't really be held up with any credibility. A lot is made out of them by the critics, but they can't be held up with any credibility. We read in Isaiah 1 verse 1 that the prophet was writing and working during the reigns of five successive kings. He was prophesying over the course of about 60 years, 60 years. Now, of course, there would be a change in his writing style. And just added to that fact alone, research has been done regarding changes in writing style. The fact of the matter is, an author's writing should and will change through the years. And if we apply the same logic that the critics apply to the book of Isaiah and apply that to some other works, we have to conclude that Paul, the Apostle Paul, only wrote 5 out of his 14 epistles. We have to conclude that Ian Fleming didn't write James Bond. We have to conclude, and they've done tests on these things, that the works of G.K. Chesterton and Graham Greene, that they had more than one author. Now, it's even been concluded by such a standard that James Joyce's Ulysses was written by 5 different authors. Now, of course, this is ridiculous, but that is the conclusion we must draw if we are to hold these authors to the same standard that the revisionists hold the book of Isaiah. Now, a change in form can be either deliberate or unintentional over several months or years, and this is no gauge for the authorship of Isaiah. This cannot be held up with proper scientific credibility. Any expert will tell you that even to begin to get a real sense of authorship based on writing style alone, you need a body of work much larger, far bigger than what we have in Isaiah. Now, there are several ancient classical historians and early writers that go back to about 200 BC who give Isaiah full attribution for the book. Not just part of it, but they give him full attribution for the book. And it's interesting, isn't it? And so typical that here, now, these days, today, more than 2,200 years on from these historians, we fancy ourselves more knowledgeable than those who lived much closer to such an ancient time period. Now, in fact, much stylistic evidence has been and can be given to show that Isaiah wrote the entire book. We won't go into that, but there's been an exhaustive comparative study on this that can be found in the book The Indivisible Isaiah, and that's written by Rachel Margoliath. So we won't, again, go into the details of specifics there. Now, there's no question that Isaiah himself was an early prophet, and even those who do try and bring forward the date of the book, even the revisionists who do try and say it was written at a later date, they only do so as far as the 6th to 5th century BC. And then, of course, we've got the Dead Sea Scrolls, the copies of Isaiah found there dating to around 100 to 200 BC. But we can determine from the writings and from the context that Isaiah was a very early prophet, and those who do try and revise his dating only do so by a couple of hundred years. And we see from the writing that Isaiah's writing is of an early Hebrew style. We can determine that just from the text alone, and that he accurately describes both the environment and the politics of his time. These things have been determined and verified through archaeology. Now, one of the major theories for the book of Isaiah is that the latter half was written by a Babylonian captive around 540 BC. Now, this is absolutely ridiculous when one considers the text within the latter half of Isaiah. So like we said, they try and break Isaiah into these two parts and then say that this latter half was written by a Babylonian captive about, say, 300 years after, 200, 300 years after Isaiah's time period. This does not hold water. Accurate descriptions are given in that half of Isaiah of the land of Israel, including accurate descriptions of a number of native trees, landscape that a captive in Babylon, and by the date the critics give, he would have been in Babylon for at least 46 years at this point. This isn't a description a captive in Babylon would have been able to portray. And furthermore, the latter half of Isaiah describes the requirement for sacrifices in the temple, and this, of course, would be redundant if it was admonition written in 540 BC, as they say, after the destruction of the temple. It wouldn't make sense to talk about this requirement for sacrifices if the temple was already in the state of destruction. And furthermore, this latter half of Isaiah criticizes Canaanite idolatry. Now, if it was written by some late fraudulent Babylonian captive, Israelite captive in Babylon, this would have been redundant as well, talking about Canaanite idolatry as opposed to Babylonian idolatry. Now, like I said, our earliest complete version of Isaiah is from the Dead Sea Scrolls, and that dates to around 125 BC, between 100 and 200 BC, for a wider look. And now, while the critics vie for a later-than-traditional date for that book, even this full-length scroll dates well before the fulfillment of a plethora of Isaiah's prophecies, many of which have since come to pass and many others yet to be fulfilled. Now, the issue that critics take with a lot of these traditionalist dates for the Bible is that that means they would have been written before the prophecies came to pass. And for the critics, for the revisionists, for those who don't believe that prophecy is real or that the future can be predicted, that God exists and that he has the power to predict the future, they must bring forward their dating of these biblical books to the time after these prophecies were fulfilled. Now, this is a problem for the book of Isaiah, because while they do try and bring forward his predictions after some of his prophecies, still Even the book of Isaiah, the full book that they found as part of the Dead Sea Scrolls, that dates before many of his prophecies were fulfilled. And in fact, Isaiah himself acknowledged that his book was written primarily to be preserved for the end time, when the main part of his prophecies would be fulfilled. And you can read about that in Isaiah chapter 30 and verse 8. And just as a matter of note, Jeremiah and Daniel both did the same things. You can see that in Jeremiah 30, verse 1, and Daniel 12. Now, the first century AD historian, famous historian Josephus, states that the prophesied King Cyrus, again, like we mentioned, he was prophesied, if we are to adhere to the traditional dates for the book of Isaiah, he was prophesied a full 150 years before he came on the scene and began fulfilling the prophecies of destroying Babylon. Now, the first century AD historian Josephus writes that this King Cyrus, when he came on the scene in the 5th century BC, he actually read of the prophecies in Isaiah, in which he was specifically named. He actually read of these prophecies about himself. And incidentally, Josephus wrote the same thing about Alexander the Great. Of course, Daniel prophesied about him coming on the scene, and he wrote that Alexander actually read of these prophecies when he came and visited Judea. So these points all add accumulative evidence for the early traditional writing of Isaiah. So when trying to redate the book of Isaiah to later ghostwriters, there's just a plethora of textual and historical problems that come from that. On the other hand, when accepting the book as written by Isaiah in the 8th century BC, as the book describes, in that case, no problems arise. There's just the one thing. You do have to accept that prophecy is real. All right, we'll take a break there. Stay with us. We'll be right back with a selection of the minor prophets to go through next.
This is Watch Jerusalem. Thank you for listening.
The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course is a distance learning program that makes the Bible clear and understandable. The Correspondence Course enables enrollees to learn what the Bible itself says about subjects that affect you and the world you live in. This fascinating Bible course highlights and proves what the Bible says about morality, war, religion, terrorism, and other current events, focusing on the root causes of this world's many problems facing man, as well as their solutions. The Bible and this course also focuses on the reason mankind was created in the first place, the way to happiness, accomplishment, and fulfillment, as well as the truth behind important doctrinal questions, such as what happens after we die, the nature of God, the resurrection, the millennium, and other critical subjects. Enroll today in the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is Watch Jerusalem, where history and prophecy come alive.
Welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. If you've just joined us, we're discussing today the composition date for the books of the Hebrew Bible, otherwise known as the Old Testament. The dating of these books is hotly contested between the traditionalists who take the books literally and the minimalists who seek to explain that the books were forged much later, specifically after many of the prophecies and descriptions within them were fulfilled. So we're going through the second division of the Hebrew Bible today, known as the prophets. Now that we've briefly covered in the first part of this program the book of Isaiah, showing that the evidence does point to an early traditional date of writing, we now look at a few of the minor prophets, and we'll start out with the book of Amos. Now, Amos is an easy prophet to place in terms of traditional dating. He lists the kings that he was contemporary with, alongside an interesting phenomenon. Amos undertook his writings, quote, 2 years before the earthquake. That's Amos 1 verse 1. Now, based on the reign of the kings, the book of Amos is traditionally placed between 790 and 750 BC. But we can be even more specific with a traditional date because, as Amos described, a massive earthquake took place throughout Israel in around 760 BC. Now, this absolutely catastrophic earthquake has been witnessed in multiple archaeological sites in and around Israel. Occupational layers from this time have been exposed to show evidence of just collapsed floors and tilted walls and massive destruction that dates to that time period shown within these layers, to the time period of around 760 BC, just as Amos writes about. So experts have even been able to guess the size of this earthquake. That's how much evidence there is for it. And from that evidence, they've guessed it was around 8.2 in magnitude. So a massive, massive earthquake that happened that Amos accurately does describe and accurately sets within the reign of these kings. Something that would be much more difficult for a fraudulent ghostwriter to do if we take the minimalist side and say that the book was written much later. Now, Amos also describes an Israel at a time of prosperity and wealth before setback and the fall of the nation toward the end of the 8th century BC. He uses a lot of early Hebrew words within his book, and that's consistent with a traditional early original date. So specifically, if the great earthquake did occur in 760 BC, then Amos's writings can be dated to around 762 BC. And then, just as he prophesied, the downfall of Israel spectacularly occurred around 40 years later. So we have a, just from the context of the book, from its similarities to Isaiah, which is traditionally dated to his time period as well, and we've looked at some evidence for that. We can date the earthquake, and we can date the early style of Hebrew pretty comfortably to that time period, around 762 BC. So quite an easy one to date traditionally for the book of Amos. Next, we look at the book of Jonah, just going quickly here through some of these minor prophets, the smaller prophets found toward the end of the way the Old Testament is ordered according to our English versions. We next go to the book of Jonah. The book of Jonah is a unique case because of his message, which is intended for the Gentile Assyrians. Now, traditionalists say that it was written by Jonah, just as it says, around the 8th century BC. Now, some minimalists believe that it was written actually around 300 years later, around 450 BC, and they describe it as a sort of angered response to Ezra and Nehemiah, who were forbidding interracial marriage with the Gentiles. So they have the theory that this book was some kind of a comeback, if you will, to Ezra and Nehemiah to say that, hey, the Gentiles aren't so bad, and why are you forbidding intermarriage with the Gentiles? So there are the positions then, the traditionalist camp and the minimalist camp. Now, what clues does this book provide? It does contain a somewhat detailed description of the Assyrian city of Nineveh. The Bible describes Nineveh as a massive city of 3 days' journey in size. That's how Jonah describes it. Archaeology shows that Nineveh plus its suburbs was actually 60 miles across, and that's equating to about 20 miles of walking per day, or 3 days' journey, just as the Bible describes. Excavations have revealed that the city proper of Nineveh was an area of about 1,730 acres, allowing plenty of room for, as the Bible describes, the 120,000 residents of the city. The author Craig Davis, who wrote the book The Dating of the Old Testament, fantastic book, looking through the Hebrew Bible, through the Old Testament, to get clues of the original dating of these books, he writes on the accuracy of Nineveh's population figures, which are given in the book of Jonah. He writes, quote, "An ancient Assyrian inscription indicates that the city of Kala, Assyria, which was not as large as Nineveh, had about 70,000 inhabitants in 879 BC. Now, this would mean that the Jonah 4 verse 11 population of Nineveh, which, as we said, was 120,000, given 100 years' time, 100 years later, this is in the right ballpark. So the population figure, the size figure that Jonah gives is just right for Nineveh. Now, this would be an unusual thing for a late fraudulent writer 300 years later. This would be an unusual thing for him to get right, especially considering that this city had well long fallen by that time period, and considering it was so far away, about 1,000 miles essentially away from some late fraudulent writer from Judea. Now, regarding the geographical accuracy, Craig Davis continues, quote, "Jonah left Nineveh and watched it from the east." Now, this would be an unusual direction to go outside of such a large city if he was merely intending to return home to Israel. So the Bible describes he left Nineveh on the east side. Now, Nineveh was located on the east bank of the Tigris River, and it had hills, a hill country area to the east of the city. Now, this would have given Jonah the perfect vantage point to view the city. Remember that Jonah, deep down, he actually wanted this punishment, this retribution to come upon Nineveh, even while he was warning them. And so he left the city wanting to witness what would happen to the city, the destruction that he thought was inevitable. So he left on the eastern side. Now, we know from the geography, we know from the archaeology, that on the eastern side we have this hill country, we have the perfect vantage point for Jonah to view what would happen to the city. And it would give the perfect early view of an army that would have come in. Now, the army would have needed to approach Nineveh from his side of the river, so it was the perfect location to view Nineveh. Now, if this book of Jonah, was written at some crazy late date, 300 years later, how would the writer know to include these details? And there's others. There are other accurate details in the book of Jonah, such as the statement that the Assyrians caused even their animals to mourn with them. Remember, Jonah went through, he proclaimed the destruction of Nineveh, and the city repented, and they caused even their animals to mourn with them. Now, this is another unusual statement, but an accurate one. There is this Assyrian tradition of having their animals participate in mourning, recorded by the historian Herodotus, however you pronounce that correctly. That is recorded around the 5th century BC by this historian, a man who was living very close to that time period. Now, how would a late fraudulent writer be able to get these details so accurate? Even the writing used by Jonah indicates an authentic style, the original Hebrew writing. There are no late Persian words, as would be expected from a later work. And there are a small amount of Aramaic words, which oftentimes critics will say points to a later period. But remember that the sailors on Jonah's ship likely spoke Aramaic, and these few small Aramaic words are used in reference to these sailors. So it all fits. All the extant evidence points to the traditional dating of around 760 BC. Now, if the post-exilic frauds had so accurately written this book 300 years later, it frankly would have been as great of a miracle as Jonah in the giant fish. Now, we'll briefly finish up with the book of Haggai. The prophet Haggai is considered perhaps the most uncontested Old Testament writer of all. Virtually everybody considers his book to be legitimate, traditionalists and minimalists alike, and dating to around 520 BC, just as the book details. So why do we cover it here? We cover it because of what it can tell us about other books of the Bible, particularly the Torah. Haggai shows a familiarity with the Torah in his book. He talks about the laws of purity described by the Torah. So he shows an understanding of these writings. However, according to the main scholarly hypothesis for the writing of the Torah, these laws weren't supposed to have been penned for another 20 to 100 years after Haggai. So if that were true, they could not have been accepted tradition or knowledgeable practice to Jews such as Haggai. And so how could that be? Thus, we see from the book of Haggai that this book helps prove an early dating of the Torah, and it helps show just how tangled and how, frankly, self-effacing the theories of the critics are. So it shows that the Torah must have already been in existence, that this portion of the Torah, who the critics say was written up to 100 years later, actually wasn't. It was actually already on the scene, was well known, in order for someone like Haggai to know about these laws and to freely discuss them with the Jews of his day. So Haggai is clearly dated to the period just before the temple is finished, during the reign of Darius I. And even the dates of his writings can be estimated with fair accuracy as being on August 29th, October 17th, and December 18th. That's the kind of accuracy that we can date Haggai's writings to. So as it turns out, there is evidence to say that it makes sense for the early traditional authorship of the prophets of the Bible. And those who take it apart are doing so with no hard evidence to go on. Primarily, they're doing it just because of their own conviction that these prophecies contained within their books couldn't have been made in advance. That's the only real reason these books are redated, because surely these prophets couldn't have predicted the future. But there's no evidence to say that the prophets couldn't have been written when the text describes. In fact, the majority, the whole wealth of evidence points to them having been written just when the Bible says. Now, of course, believing in this literal account means believing in prophecy. It means believing in a God who's capable of predicting the future. A God who, quote, declares the end from the beginning and from ancient times, the things that are not yet done, saying, "My counsel shall stand, and I will do all my pleasure." That's Isaiah 46, verse 10. But that's a step way too far for the critics, and it seems no amount of evidence can change that. So as time goes on, the evidence continues to mount for an early traditional authorship of the Bible. And we'll see that as we continue our series, next looking into the third part of the Tanakh, of the Old Testament, of the Hebrew Bible, and that part is the writing. The writings. Now that covers it for today's program. Hopefully, if your regular host Brent Nagtigal lets me do another program, we'll cover the third division of the Hebrew Bible, the writings. I would like to spend a good amount of time talking about the book of Daniel. We'll cover that with the writings. While he is one of the prophets, his book is classified in the Hebrew Bible as one of the writings. So we'll hopefully discuss that then. Anyway, in the meantime, check out our website, watchjerusalem.co.il. There's a lot of great articles up there that have been going up recently. You'll find a full article up there explaining what we have discussed today, and that article is entitled "The Antiquity of the Scriptures, the Prophets." If you have any questions or comments, please email us at letters@watchjerusalem.co.il. But until next time, thanks for listening. Shalom and goodbye. We'll be right back.